Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, it's Big Mike from Essex, and you're listening to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything. My question is, what thing about your family when you were young did you later discover was actually quite odd? We always had baked beans with our roast dinner, and I've since found out that's very much not normal. Try it, you won't look back. Enjoy this week's episode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast where myself, comedian, writer, and occasional actor Dame Baptiste, my producer friend Howard Cohen, aka The Hizzer,
hello,
and a mix of a very special guest pose the questions that need to be asked. And we're talking everything from...
We are talking everything from Big Mike from Essex's question, what thing in your family did you grow up thinking was normal when it was actually pretty weird? Dane, anything spring to mind of what was weird about your family growing up? Everything
compared to everyone else. I think the only weird thing for me was that, I guess, when most of my friends who were also descended from, my parents are first generation, so they weren't born in the UK. And I found that most of my friends that were born of the same generation, their parents were second generation. And so I felt like there was a lot of platitudes that my parents had that my friends didn't have. Like, I thought everyone would have a curfew and have to be home by 12. I thought everybody had to clean their house. I thought everybody didn't get pocket money. And I thought that, I found out one of my friends, his parents used to give him his child benefit book to spend himself. And put it this way, I didn't even know child benefit existed until he told me.
Some good examples of how your family were definitely different. I can't really actually think of any in mine. I'm sure there was some food-related ones that were weird. There's lots of things that families do that are weird with food.
And Christmas, I mean, you know, some people, my family... Also, rice with a roast dinner.
There you go.
I thought everybody did that. And then when I actually had a roast outside of my house and realised that there was no rice... Oh, there was a problem that Toby Carvey went down that night, Howard. Oh, we went crazy up there.
Well, suffice to say, we ask and answer all the questions, including that one from Big Mike.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for that question, Big Mike. And if you want to hear us answering all the questions, remember that no question is too big, too small, too stupid, or too intelligent. If you do like the show, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify, and you'll never miss an episode. Or subscribe to us on Acast, the world's largest podcast network, where you can hear all of the very special guests answering the very special questions. With that being said, on today's show, our guest is a former French footballer. As a striker, he played in the Premier League for Fulham, Manchester United, Tottenham and Everton, scoring 85 goals in 289 appearances. He's won two Premier League titles and the Champions League, and is also one of the co-founders of the Amazing Access Stars organization and app, which links luxury brands and opportunities and hospitality and leisure to former and current athletes and entertainers. It's a magnifique Mr. Louis Saha.
Hi, guys.
Ça va, monsieur?
Très bien, très bien.
And, Louis, I left out of your biog the fact that you scored the fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final, right? 25 seconds into that final.
Yeah, I did, but it's not the best record that I'm proud of. I don't think that's good enough. I would have preferred to be maybe a winner last minute or last second of a game, you know? We didn't,
that's a fair point.
Didn't lift that trophy, so don't really care.
Yeah, Chelsea.
Yeah.
Drogba, yes. Tough guy.
Lampard, yeah.
But you still won the leagues. You know, you got the league medal, so, you know.
Yeah, gone some trophies.
Well, yeah, I think it's safe to say that your achievements and your position in footballing history and Premier League history has already been cemented, Lewis. Not only amazing appearances and two Premier League titles, but two very memorable haircuts. Let's not forget that.
Hey, you got me.
Yes.
You got me.
Some serious hair.
You know, it's the pay francophone perm that we all know and love, whether it was yourself or Didier Drogba, but very distinct.
Yes. Let's say that. I started the mess. I started the mess everyone now is like doing some strange things. So that's why I'm with my cap now. I'm trying to be.
But we remember who set that trend, you know, between yourself and, you know, I'd say Jibril Cisse and Didier Drogba, Ibrahim Bar. Yeah. Like, these are the men that took the real risks. And I guess to a lesser extent, maybe Mario Balotelli over the last decade or so. But we know who set pace, Lewis. We salute you as a fashion anthem.
It's worth saying, you know, people, you know, there's a lot of people who might not know everything as much as we do about football, Dane, that you know, Louis came over to this country and smashed it at Fulham. Just like this, it was just incredible for her. How many years were you playing for Fulham before you moved to Man United, right?
Yeah, three and a half good years. And it was, you're right, Fulham. Introduction was pivotal for my career because it bring me a lot of confidence. We started that year with that style where we're starting to play nice football on the floor, and then maybe the championship was not ready for that, and that's why we just like take them by surprise, I would say.
Yeah, and you scored some great goals. No, they were beautiful goals as well, right? I remember some absolute.
And it was
must be an amazing thing to look back on.
Yeah, it's funny because like I do feel about this and straight away I look at other people's records and I look at Messi and Ronaldo scoring 50 goals a season and I say, hang on a minute, I scored half and I felt like God, you know, and he was in the championship. So imagine those guys, it's just like, it's another level, really, really, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Not human, not well, something special going on.
Yeah.
It's probably time for a question, hey Dane, as this the format of this show dictates.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'm thinking of one question, but obviously, Lewis, there is a barrage of questions, and I know a few Man United supporters that would have had loads of questions for you as well, but I'm sure we can catch up at a later date. But again, it's an absolute pleasure to have you know, footballing royalty and Premier League royalty on the show. That being said, as our esteemed guest, we would invite you to ask the first question, whichever question you would like. Which we'll discuss for about 50 minutes or some change. Then Howard will do the same. I believe it's going to be football related because you can see how excited the hisser is. And that means a lot, Lewis, because you're from Man United. So technically we should be insulting you throughout the duration of this podcast because we're both gunners. But I know you as a man, you're a good man, so we're going to leave it out.
They won. They won.
All right, Howard,
they won.
Blah, blah, blah. Technical, whatever. Blah, blah, blah. But, then Howard would like to ask a question, and then I would like to ask you a final question. And then once we are all done, I would love for you to be able to let our listeners know where they can find out more about your good works, and also check out some of your previous work as well. So with that being said, Mr. Lewis Saha, we invite you to ask the first question.
Yes, I'm very passionate about what's going on in life right now. Everyone seeing what's happening, so. Basically, like everyone have a mission to help to make a difference. So how can we make a difference? That's my question.
What a brilliant question. Right, Dane, that's
great
a
question.
Powerful question.
Great question, and a testament to the man as well that the question is a humanitarian one. Where most people would think, you know, the trappings and perks of fame and athleticism would, you'd have different preoccupations, Lewis, so we respect that. Would that be a difference overall or a difference socially or ecologically, economically?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of grounds to cover because like everything seems to be linked for me, you know. We could say about like racism or sexism or whatever it is, you know, like the world seems to be, let's say, if I can swear, fucked up in some way. So I'm like, yeah, how can people realize that we are going in the wrong direction and we need to make some changes? We talk about climate changes. We talk about like sports and the values that we can bring and share. Culture is the same. So all those things to say, like everyone have like different, like, let's say, skills and preoccupation, I would think. But how everybody can make a difference? Some are like employees, some are like startups or whatever. Some are comedians, some are well known and some not. How we can make all different.
I tell you one way that anyone from any background generally can make a difference is read about the things you want to care about, learning about them, right, Dane? We often talk about this on this podcast. Yeah. You know, there's a world of Twitter where people are not reading enough about the, or learning enough about the stuff that they care
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's down to the state that we live in now, where technology has taken over so many of our more menial and less glamorous preoccupations as a society, is that now that can be done for us. It's probably allowed us to become a lot more complacent and a lot more relaxed in terms of how the world is going, Lewis. So I think you're correct. I think we live in a time where technology has facilitated so many aspects of the human condition that it's allowed us to kind of, I suppose, become very lax on certain aspects of human interaction. So I think, for example, basically etiquette, for example, in that I think most people know how they need to speak to other people without causing offense or oppressing or insulting somebody. But I think with the anonymity that the internet gives you, or social media gives you, that allows for people to say things which you wouldn't normally say in normal conversation, and kind of gets away from it. So I think so far as how to make a difference from that, I think as a larger conversation for all human beings and people to use social media, I think, and it may be something that happens naturally over time, but we have to observe some level of etiquette whereby if you are going to contextualize your narrative and how you feel about things along lines of social media, then you should be able to be forthright about who you are, in the same way that, like, you know, you need a license to drive a car because people are aware that your actions will affect other people. You know, you need a license to buy a plane because, you know, you need a license to practice medicine. You need a license to sell alcohol because we are aware that, you know, these actions will affect other human beings. And I think if we are seeing that there is a physical or psychological detriment that's caused by online abuse, for example, then maybe there needs to be some licensing involved. Like, I don't necessarily want to say that we have to curtail speech or censor people, but if you're going to say something to another human being, then maybe you should stand by it and stand up there with your name.
How do you feel about making a difference, Louis? Do you feel a pressure to kind of make a difference as an ex-player with such kind of a high profile?
Yeah, the pressure is, it's more about like living with a sense of purpose. I now, obviously, I'm older. When you are 20, you want to enjoy life, try to take the opportunity, and you know, it's like a lot of pressure to keep your position, you know, so you have to get it. And when you feel like you are like experienced enough, you're starting to look at other position, I would say, other situation. But first, you're very kind of like selfish. But now, because of what we were talking about with Dan, with the social media, you can see a lot of things on the internet. You can see a lot of people doing good things. You can see a lot of situations who are really bad. Now you can't like just like saying, "Oh yes, I'm living on my own bubble anymore." You have to readdress those things and have the right messages when people are asking you about it. So yes, in some way you are forced to actually take a position. Some are easier to take than others. When it comes or becomes too political, you want to really put yourself on the side because it could be really dangerous. But you have to do some kind of like education process. You know, you have to learn and need to understand, because you are at some point, if you are successful enough, you become an icon without realizing it. You know, you have to say like you have to understand that. People are following you. People are taking your advice, or and this is a responsibility. That has become a responsibility. So, yes, you have to, because, like, from age 25 or 20, let's say 27, you're starting to have a kid or two. So you have to do it for your kids. So you have to do it regardless. So I think that's, it's normal, because you want to leave a legacy behind and making sure that people understand who you are and don't like just like put yourself in the box because you're a footballer. You don't think, or you crash cars, or you do this and no. So we have this mission to actually say, no, we can do things. And I think one of the example is Rashford. Everyone gonna say his name as an example, yeah, because he's a pioneer in a way to have very easily, let's say, a letter, a good writing letter, to actually change the behavior of a government. So imagine the amount of power that you have in your hands when obviously he's got like millions of followers, but still a lot of like people without maybe that amount of following can still do good things. So this is why I'm asking the question, because I think wherever that they want to do it. It could be dangerous if you do it without the knowledge or without the support. Who's got the knowledge? So all those things are a question that I'm very passionate about. We had a podcast with you then, and I've seen how, you know, like, let's say, you have like a lot of culture, you know, a lot of things, and it was deep conversation. And this is what we are looking for. It's like talking to the right people. We got that kind of like, you know, wide vision. You know, we can like say, okay, I can understand this, I understand that, and be as well in some way, let's say, like, tolerant, because there's a lot of things. It's not super easy, you know. It's not just like a choice or two. No, it's like a process, and that's why I think a lot of brands need to come together and challenge ourselves and think about all those things. Because yes, I may have an idea, but mine will be one layer. May then bring another, and you are what are gonna bring another, and this is the him. I think this type of chat is very important.
I think you're absolutely right, Lewis. I think unity is always going to be a position of strength and done very positively. And I feel you're absolutely correct in terms of the fact that it does show, as dangerous as it may be, effective using a platform for something positive can always yield like big results. And you know, it's really refreshing, especially someone as a former athlete, to say it, because I think the zeitgeist we're dealing with now is a lot of the time when people do offer their opinion or they offer their outlook on the world, people will say to them, I'll stick to football and don't get involved in politics. But I mean, I've always found that to be a ridiculous statement, in that any person who is a taxpayer or is going to be subject to any government policy or any law has the same equal right to protest or, you know, articulate their protest like any other normal civilian would as well. Like, I don't think an athlete or a footballer has any less qualification than a member of a government to talk about issues that might affect their lives. And the reason I say that is because if you look at the most recent president, he started off as a reality TV star. So if a reality TV show can be involved in a position of politics, there's no reason why a sports person can't do the same. Even before Donald Trump, Ronald Reagan was an actor before he became the head leader of the free world, and no one had a problem with that. So I believe that, you know, you're right, that I think there should always be a share of knowledge and resources. I find that it can seem like you're an individual because, you know, you get these terms like idol, icon, or role model. But I think it's very important for people in particular positions, irrespective of what industry they're working in, to always have an open dialogue and interact with each other and share information and opportunities. So, you know, even so, I might work in a world of entertainment and you have previously worked in, sports. But at the same time, I think a lot of our experiences will be very similar and we could both benefit for how we kind of interpret those experiences. And I say that because like I said, Marcus Rashford is a typical example whereby, you know, that's a footballer who wouldn't necessarily need to be involved, but by him actively being involved is something, because, you know, people see the footballer and they see this athlete and they see this wealthy athlete, but behind the veneer, he says himself, I had to subsist on government and sponsorship and food, otherwise I wouldn't have been able to make it. So I think that's a large part of it, is that empathy is a big issue, that, you know, even if you may have a comparatively better or worse position than some people, that person is not responsible for your suffering a lot of the time. And if you really want or feel bad about your suffering, why would you visit that on somebody else? And, you know, it's refreshing to see someone like Marcus Rashford, through his work and his platform, being able to affect government policy, which means that if athletes do get involved in politics, a lot of time it can work. I mean, I have an even bigger example is George Weah. George Weah became the president of Liberia and he used to be a footballer. I mean, you know, you are satisfying both parents with that kind of work. Like, I mean, you go from being like an athlete and like an accomplished Champions League athlete to also being the head of state. I mean, that just shows you what limits can be achieved if people are able to think out of their box and be able to engage people. And, you know, when you think about the intensity and the severity of the conflict that was in Liberia at the time, like, you know, a footballer who was playing, I think at the time, was he playing for Sampdoria or something before that, or AC Milan. So you know, again, it would have been all the more reason for him to not even be paying attention to the ills of his country, but he got actively involved and it shows you what can happen. Like, I'm also aware that Clarence Seedorf does a lot of outreach work for UNICEF, a lot of work in South America and stuff as well. And I just think it just should be a natural thing whereby if you work in an industry, we are constantly interacting with new people, new places. It's bringing you to different horizons like entertainment sports do. It would be remiss of you not to be able to have your perspective be a lot more broad as well and realize that there is a big wide world out there and there's a lot of stuff to be done. So
I think there is a lot of like situation come from school. I don't understand. There is like some process that we're going to live with it, being challenged by it for pretty much like 60 to 70% of the time, you know, and it could be like how to communicate. You said it before. You know, you should be having a license to go on to social media, for example. It's about basic knowledge about like empathy and understand that if you say something like this, it will have like a bad reaction, but they actually think that it's funny or whatever it is, you know, all those things. I don't think we've been taught how to speak to each other, how to respect each other. This as like, it's basic, but it's not teach at school. It's like you need to open the book and like read French or read English or whatever, know how to build a sentence. But that's not the main skill that you're going to actually use. You know, you need really need to understand how to interact with people, how to make them do the good things or the thing that you want to make them understand, and all those things. This is more important.
Well, and social media is making that worse, isn't it? Social media is giving children a way to not have to talk to people in person and make them less skilled at discussing stuff.
Oh, stunting their ability to interact with other people. And it's like I said, with the school thing, it's kind of like, it's an interesting point you make about like learning how to the right use of language and how to interact with people, because you know people say that 90% of human communication is nonverbal, but at the same time, you can always learn to how to address people. And I think you're right, but I think the largest issue is more about it's also the issue of listening. I think making a difference, and going back to what I was saying before, is that like I really feel you act locally and think globally. I think if you can work to kind of enrich the immediate environment you're in and try to enrich your own community, then that's a large part of making a difference in the first place. Because I feel like a large part of the disposition that people have when they're like, well, it's all about me and I don't care, is because a lot of us anticipate that our peers and everyone else feels the same way. And everyone else is kind of like, well, it's all about me. I was born alone, I die alone, and blah, blah, blah. And I think it's weird that we have a tool like social media, which can really put you in a room with people from parts of the world you may have never been before to have a conversation. And yet it has not been able to demonstrate more global unity, because you think if people had the visibility and, you know, the opportunity to, because now someone can send something to you and may not speak English as a first language. You can pop that straight into Google Translate and find out exactly what they're saying. And I imagine we're probably not that far off of like, you know, vocal or audio translators. So we're getting closer and closer to having more and more tools, which allows us to interact with people on a much closer level than previously. And yet it's very strange that while technology is facilitating what could be more of a bigger landscape for human connection, we're regressing to be more like amoebas and be these single-celled organisms and only worry about what's happening within our immediate cell. Mm-hmm. So I think for that to change, it at least needs to observe some level of local unity. And I guess that can only come from some element of dialogue where I've said before on a podcast where I think there are gyms, obviously, for physical things, but there should be gyms for psychological things. You know, obviously, people have like access to psychiatry and they can go to a therapist, but that's not really a privilege that everybody has necessarily. But by the same token, if we were to increase the field of study of looking at the complex of human emotion and how people think the same way we do on the physical, then, you know, you probably observe a certain level of health. I mean, arguably, there's more gyms, but it's not like obesity is going down necessarily.
Definitely not.
But maybe that's the reason for that, is because we live in a world whereby we don't necessarily help people address issues, but we tend to enable them for capital gain. So it's not necessarily about lambasting or insulting someone for being overweight. But I think what we don't do within our society is to address the fact that in many instances, the incidence of obesity comes from compulsion and from people trying to fill a spiritual or psychological hole with something physical. And that's not something we tend to address. So instead of looking at obese people and what they're eating, we should find out what's eating them. Mm-hmm. And I think it's stuff like that we kind of need to do in society in order to kind of make a difference, is that it's just that recognition of humanity, really. It's not going to be done for us, because obviously it serves some other people for us to kind of be divided. I really just think that the key is, like I said, for people like yourself and myself to remember that these what we do doesn't define who we are alone, and that we're still people and still human beings. And I always find that one of the best ways I can always navigate and try my best to be as caring for other people as possible is that I always think, you know, somewhere in the world, there is another Dane somewhere who's probably equally frustrated about where his life is and wants to do something else. Like I went to do 10 years ago when I started doing comedy, there's another Dane out there who feels the same way. So if anything, I'm doing it for that guy. Like I think most people understand about, you know, you know, about kind of what's called holographic principle, but it's kind of like, I guess it's like you said, it's thinking of the future and thinking of your kids, but at the same time, understanding that it takes a village to raise a child. And even if I don't have children of my own, you know, the children are the future, whether they're mine or not, or have my last name. So my actions will still affect them as well. So I really think it's really about walking in other people's shoes as much as possible.
You know, when I ask the question, the first thing is like, if we really want to make a difference, because we are not saying that we are too old, but I think that I'm very focused on how to give that kind of knowledge or like awareness about how this impact of knowing each other or having this empathy and all those things. So communicate and give that kind of like skills, you know, to understand each other and understand why this guy is doing this. He know that he's bad, but he doesn't, you know, like all these things, you know, like I love to find a way to, yeah, to put it like everyone like in front of their mirror and just realize that, you know, this is really, really hard. And this is where we're going to make a difference. You say about this gym of psychology, this is it. It's like trying to make them like think like outside the box of what they have been like formatted, you know, with like the social media, the school process, that it's like sometimes it's really good to be academic, but there is no the practice, you know, thing, you know, where you really like get like a smart but in a good way, you know, and this is where I feel like we need as like kind of mentors to make them realize and spread the word and make sure like people who are in power like put that mandatory.
And I think it's an amazing way of kind of looking at the world, and it kind of actually feeds into what my question is perfectly, because I wanted to talk about something that I wish we didn't have to talk about, Louis. And you know, me and Dane talk about all different things on this podcast. I mean, I remember going to watch football in the 90s, go and watch Arsenal. I remember being at a game where I watched Ian Wright get racially abused. And my brother stood up and told the guy to shut up, and you know, it felt quite weird for that to happen. I've been to a lot of Arsenal games and I can't tell you I've ever seen that happen. I'm sure it happens, but I've never seen it happen. And now we're living in an era where racist abuse in football is one of the biggest headlines. And every game we watch in the Premiership, the players are taking the knee, which feels really important. But it makes me want to ask you both the question, how does racism in football stop? It feels incredible that I'm even saying that in 2021, but it's come back in such a big way.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, I'd like to offer Louis answer the question first, because you're the one here who's actually played football.
Yeah. So in sport is like it's such a difficult ecosystem. For some reason, the ones who have the power to actually not saying that they're gonna stop it, but they're actually gonna actually really do the actual actions, gonna actually reduce it, let's say, they're not doing it. And first, it starts with punishment. Punishment means you have strict rules, strict understanding that if you do that, whether online or in stadium, face-to-face, whatever, in the street, you're going to be sanctioned. And this is what is missing from whatever FIFA, UEFA, FIBA, whoever the actual organization. They are the ones who give the rules. If, like, the sportsman himself misconduct, they get banned properly. And they banned for whatever months or something like this. But those guys behind offices, they do stuff in a certain process where politics and commercial go up front. That's it. So when they say maybe, wait, if this gonna be asked the sponsor to be sanctioned because it's not gonna be able to be seen on the stadium because the stadium has been banned, there is like a commercial aspect into it. So there is like those aspects, but it's about defending the players. It's about defending the fans or whatever it is. It's the most important actors of those games. There is no money. There is no commercial if there is no player and there is no fans. Done.
Uh-huh. Well, and that's one of the things that's come up here, actually, is the fact that so much of the racial abuse at the moment is obviously online. And the reason it's not being dealt with is because there's no money in it for Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Again, they put commercial up front. You know, if like they're saying they want to actually defend their customers, their clients, their whatever it is, and saying this is the good thing to do. If you make billions and you recognize that this is the way forward to actually help the society, you do it regardless because you have now the duty as you become an influencer. You have like this, the same impact as a player is become an influencer. A platform like Facebook, Twitter is the same. There are guidelines for any other companies in this planet. And they are not doing the good stuff because they should be straight away banned those situation and say this is not acceptable anymore. Whatever you do it, we're gonna track you and it's over. You can't do whatever, you get a license or whatever, you can't do online post anymore. So you're gonna be sanctioned and this is unacceptable and we don't want you in these platforms. A star, someone famous, is gonna do something bad, say something really bad. I mean, like, not just racist, like something bad, is not going to be able to actually be on the platform anymore.
Yeah.
So I don't understand. So one star could do something bad, is banned, is kicked out of Twitter, like we've seen with like the big political. So how come those guys can do it? No. You have like, you track everything. They know where we are, where we piss, where we do this, where they know everywhere. So it's really strange. So all those things we're saying about the ones up top, they know it. They understand.
Yeah.
Please don't do it because there is no money.
Well, yeah, there's no money involved. And that's a large part of what is always going to be the racism has always been one of the fuels for the capitalist machine. And I think on a large scale, Howard, I think the issue is not just racism in football. I think, you know, we have always talk about things like art imitating life. Well, you know, the beautiful game in many ways also imitates life and stuff as well, whereby, you know, you also have the same phenomenon where there's an element of sexism within the football industry as well. There's a marginalization of black players, or there has been historically for a very long time. Then there's also the continued marginalization of black retired players when they try to make the move into managerial positions or into coaching positions, particularly at Premier League teams in this country. And I think, you know, all of these stem from you know, institutional racism, whereby, you know, someone like Chris Hughton or, you know, has proved himself again and again and still has to jump through hoops in order for him to have the opportunity to manage a Premier League team. And normally when that opportunity comes along, he's given, you know, insufficient tools in order to achieve the task. And if you fail once, you're punished for it severely. I think something very similar to Chris Powell as well. But I think I'm definitely on
Lewis' side in terms of like if you're able to track footballers when they get up to bad stuff, or if a footballer invites women over to their home or their training camp in England, then you can track the actions of these people that racially abuse players. And I completely agree. I think if you are found to be racially abusing players, I think your punishment should be any kind of way you assault somebody or racially assault someone. You should have to do community service. Or if you are a season ticket holder, that should be revoked. I think potentially you have no contact with the team or any of its players. So you are blocked from there, and your email domain is blocked from there as well. And yeah, it should be made very clear on your CV that you've racially abused somebody, or people should be aware of what you do. Exactly. Either that, or, you know, personally, and you might agree with me, Louis, I think we can just handle it Eric Cantona style, and you can get booted in the face.
But the thing that kind of gets to me, Dane, and it slightly broadens it away from just racism, but indulge me for a second, is I remember some of the most happy times in my life, and I'm sure it applies to Luke, are from football, you know, sharing it with my friends and my family, watching Arsenal win the league very long time ago, but watching Arsenal win the league, and it's such a beauty. You can get such joy from it. And yet it generates so much hatred in people. I mean, being a footballer, Louis, I've got to ask, you know, the fans, when they're being so hateful, how do you deal with that? How did you deal with that?
It's strange.
Scored the fastest goal in FA Cup history. That's what I did, Howard.
Yes, I do feel like I love the passion. I love the you know, sometimes it go way too much, and it's difficult to control, because I understand it, because it's some like ways or special way to express themselves and be someone else at some point, you know, because you could have like a banker who's like walking like really strict rules like all the week, and on the weekend where there is like full of fans and all that, he just like release everything. So I understand that. So the hate, for some reason, I never really like felt it or even opened my house to try to see it. I didn't like really felt this, because as a player, I don't think we see this. We are kind of protected. I will feel like fans to fan, yes, they will say hate, but I will be a liar to say, oh yes, I've seen like a massive violent conduct in any kind towards me. It never happens. Sometimes I do have like the idiot. I would call them idiot more than like just like trying to be like violent or something like this, because those most of the times are cowards. This is what I'm saying, that they are behind fence and they do this and all that. And it's the same as the guy on the pitch. You know, you have a lot of players who act in a certain way on the field, but when you outside or like in another context and you talk to them like face to face, they are like just like, you know, like, so I'm just having it. I know that they are personal. They're playing a game or something like this. And it's pretty much similar with fans. I know they are parents, you know, in some way. They don't conduct themselves the same way. And this is what I always thought, you know, it's like, this is the atmosphere. This is the context. So I really didn't really like always feel like I was talking to a man or to a dad or to a woman. I just felt like it was a supporter. He's playing the role of a supporter. He's like trying to be like, I always felt like this. So maybe sometimes some are really, really passionate, but I never addressed this as like, no, I don't think so. And most of the times I will feel, apart from some supporters who are absolutely crazy, yes, but mainly I always speak about the mainly guys. I only speak about the majority, the odd idiots, you know, or the violence, or just like this. They're just idiots, you know, they don't make the difference between life and reality or whatever. I don't take them as like, it's a detail for me.
Well, it's the same thing. It's the same thing of how there will be a news story about a footballer who has behaved stupidly.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. You forgot the hundreds of other players who've been behaving really well during lockdown.
That's my focus. I always like First, I hate cliche. So this is what I'm saying. And I don't like to be influenced by anything that's going to be, I've seen on papers, and I don't do that. You know, you can come and say stories to me. Oh yes, you know, this guy has done that. Those girl has done this and that. No, I just like listen, but I don't take action from that. So I'm trying to protect myself because a lot of people are doing personal things. You know, they're acting in some way. So I don't take it. But this is why I'm more focused about the youngsters. I don't want the youngsters to be influenced badly, because those ones grow with something really fake. And they think it's real. And this is where it's really dangerous. And I just really hate that. So those paradigms have more power to really destroy people. And this is what I'm trying to really say. Oh, no, please listen. This is not real. Oh, listen, like, do your own research. Or, like, just, like, find out. Because those people who are, like, again, like, the cliche was, like, the Lazio people. So I'm going into the Lazio people. Were racist. First, when I hear this, I don't like it, because I know it's like some of the Lazio fans were racist or were like fascist or whatever you're saying. But don't like put like everyone in the same basket. And this is the type of things in terms of communication for me is very important. And I try to address, because I'm sure that most of the, only a few were really bad supporters, but the other ones are really fine, you know. And I have stories with like some fanatics like comes to my hotel and drive me to the stadium, to the training ground. So it's impossible. So yes, those guys were like looking like very mean, but they're not. They're sometimes acting in some way, and you need to have like a mutual respect, and things go really well.
I think we feel very privileged, don't we, Dane, to be able to talk to a kind of pro player about this subject.
Absolutely. And you know, I think a lot of time there's a lot of speculation about what it's like to deal with it, and it's good to hear directly from how you kind of rationalize it and deal with it, Lewis, especially because, and it's good that you're concerned about the youth. I think a lot of people underestimate the amount of resilience that is just required for you to be playing at the level that you were playing at. And like I said, younger footballers are dealing with a lot more attention and direct contact with supporters on the industry than ever before. Even though, you know, being on the terraces can be tough, doing that and then going to your phone and still seeing people abuse you can be tough.
Then so, that's why you just like, if you want to see it, you see the comments and all that. I heard like Rio Ferdinand was saying, oh no, don't look at the comments and something like this. And most of the time it's real, you know. Yeah, should not maybe look at it. Or if you do, you just take like a really big, big step. It's like those are comedians. They're just like acting. They want attention. Whatever it is, it's not real. It's funny. Some of the guys come after a game. I was commenting against Paris Saint-Germain. So it's fun. And I was saying the truth about the game. They play really bad. And some of the fans really like starting to insult my mom, insult my family and stuff like this. And then I say, I love, because I say, wow, it's deep. Those guys have nothing else to do than insult my mom, because she has nothing to do with it. So it's like you're crazy. You actually say, oh, why are you saying this to my mom and all that? It's just using this to make me react. And I don't, so I laughed. And the only thing I can do, it was like laughing and say, oh, how dumb those guys are. That's it.
Well, it's been amazing to hear you talk about that. And I mean, for me, you know, and for a lot of football fans, I think it's so important to hear it talked about in that kind of detail, right, Dane? And
And to have such a stoic response to it as well, I think you're right. Again, more punitive measures for people that kind of ruin the game and not tarring all fans with the same brush. Although I'm thinking, both of you guys, maybe I could come on as a consultant for footballers. So when they are abused, they turn around and say something like, yes, maybe my mom did help with my mom. I've got a bad touch, and my mom's got a bad touch too. You know who's got a good touch? Your mom's great.
It could be good.
This one reminds me of the one close to your mom's house. How about that, Riff?
I like that.
If you thought that head was good, I'll tell you about some good head at your mom's house.
Just because of time, I'm just going to hand it. It's probably time to hand it over to Dane for his question to kind of wrap up today's episode.
There were many questions I wanted to ask Mr. Lewis Saha, obviously, but I imagine they've all been asked by most fans, patrons, and Premier League enthusiasts. My thing is, the background behind this is that I think for a long time, as a Caribbean immigrant, but based on what we were talking about before, me and I think a lot of my peers have struggled with representation within football. I think at a club level, a lot of the time, we've always felt we were in, represented. And I think to a large extent, black players, despite a lot of the hurdles, are overrepresented in football and are continuing to do so, which I think is amazing. And when you see like some of the achievements of ballers like, you know, Jadon Sancho playing in the Bundesliga, etc. However, what I'm saying is that because of the lack of representation, what a lot of my friends used to do is we would show solidarity with teams like Brazil and France, because Brazil has one of the largest populations of Africans outside of the continent. And so a lot of their players would be Afro-Brazilian, and they looked like they had a viable chance of actually progressing in world competitions. And the other team would be France, because to an extent, I suppose, French players, especially French players who are from North African pay francophones, as well as players from the French West Indies, such as Martinique and Guadeloupe, we identified with them in some ways culturally more than we would with the England football team. And also, again, it's kind of like, well, they look like they're actually going to go somewhere. So, you know, with players like yourself, you know, Trezeguet, Henri, Vieira.
Oh, Thuram? Yeah. Thuram?
Thuram, yeah, Desailly. So the list goes on and on of like Afro-French footballers who, you know, definitely have an affinity with British, black British football fans and stuff as well. Anyway, I say I would like to say this, Lewis. I would like to know from you, who is your top 11 French Afro-French footballing squad?
Cool.
Doesn't have to be from any era, whether it's from the past, present, or future, any team. The only stipulation is that they are from either, you know, basically a pay francophone, a French-speaking country, or an African country, or Caribbean country. So,
goalkeeper, you have Bernard Lama.
Played for Paris Saint-Germain. He went to West Ham at one point, if I remember correctly.
Lama was a great goalkeeper. So right,
he used to wear the
Howard. You write down this formation so we upload this as well.
I'm doing it.
And if any listeners want to contest Lewis's starting 11, then feel free.
That's a really strong one, basically. So Thuram right back, maybe Galas. Depends. Galas and Thuram can swap right back and centre back, and you have Sylvestre left back.
Contentious one.
An underrated player. He played well for a very long time.
Well for you.
I'm sorry. Oof, it's going to be tough here. I've got Abidal and Patrice Evra.
There you go. Yeah.
So yes, this is a tough one.
That's a great defense. Now you've left out Desai, but
yeah, big defense. So you have like of course you have Zidane. I'm sorry, but he's African, Algerian.
Berber, definitely.
You have Thierry Henry. You have Wiltord.
An underrated player.
Yes, you have Jiwi Cissé. A lot of players here. But I put Olivier Dacour as well, play for Inter and
Everton and Lazio.
So how many is there?
That's pretty much a full team. I think you need one more midfielder.
Midfielder.
Makélélé is someone who would often come up in this conversation.
Course, yeah. And Patrick Vieira. No, it's too much.
It's not easy as it looks. So it's a tough one. Because you've got Macaulay, you've got SCN, and then you've got Lassana Diarra as well, right?
Too many.
Yeah, I'm Paul Pogba.
too many. I forget Paul. No, it's too much.
Hey, we said the Torre brothers as well.
Oh, happy with MVP as well. No, it's impossible.
That is very tough. You got Kylian as well. What is Karim Benzema as well?
Karim, top player. Now French national team need to really thank their.
I feel like you also left out your old teammate as well, Patrice. You said Patrice, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah,
Of course, okay.
Yeah,
got to have Patrice, man.
You played with some amazing players, Louis. Are there any that you particularly, when you think back on your playing career, that you, God, I loved playing with that guy?
Oh, yes. The one that I have to mention is obviously Zidane. You know, when you have the chance to play with a maestro like this, football become easy. Football comes like slow. It's like you can see the ball coming. He already like make it easy for you. So yes, it's magician.
Yeah, that was with the French national team, right? You played.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like the guy from the Matrix.
Exactly. You said it. Yeah, it's definitely the guy who has like similar as like. Messi in some ways, no, because those guys, like, they may not be the fastest, but the way they see the overall pitch, it's unbelievable. It's it's an amazing skill because everything seems easy.
And Zidane is definitely African, Lewis. He wouldn't have headbutted Marco Materazzi if he wasn't.
that Lewis, were you there that day? Were you in the French squad for that 2006 World Cup?
Yes, I was in the stand because I was suspended, but I did miss the moment where he did headbutt the guy. But I think he done one of the biggest mistakes of his life. But For sure, that's a moment again that proved that we're all human. And what can I say, you know?
I mean, it truly is one of the most unbelievable things to ever happen in sport. The arguably one of the greatest players of all time. Mm-hmm. The last thing he ever did was in the biggest game that there is.
Yeah, it's crazy.
As you say, it really proves that we all are human.
And I feel like integrity was more important to him than just the game alone. And I'm not saying that it's something that he would have thrown away for his teammates, but I think had Zinedine Zidane articulated that to his teammates, that he would have got a lot of solidarity. I'm only saying that because I watched Nicolas Anelka's documentary. He had a lot of problems with the French coach, but seeing the unity and the support that he got from his fellow teammates, like, it's like there's a real socialist kind of sentiment amongst French players where I feel like you guys are very united in terms of supporting each other. And, you know, even seeing people come to the support of Nicolas Anelka was really, really encouraging.
Yeah, it is. And in the same way, as like, again, the same as like the fight against racism, you will see that the actual organization didn't protect the players. Again.
Yeah, and that's what happens. I think people felt if Zidane knew he'd be protected and he could report that, then, you know, it would have been very different. But at the end of the day, you know, the guy said what he said. All I'm saying is, everyone remembers who Zinedine Zidane is.
Yeah. Well, it's been a brilliant, brilliant episode this week, isn't it, Dane? Because we're both big football fans, Louis, and so it's a real joy to get you on the show, right, Dane?
Absolutely. I really appreciate it. And particularly, it's so encouraging and amazing when, footballers are using their platform for positive change and just definitely trying to encourage a lot more positivity, not just in the industry, but just on a larger humanitarian scale. So we very much appreciate you coming on the podcast and doing so, Lewis. Could you tell our listeners where they could find out more about you? Although, if you don't know, you must be an alien, but...
the website is www.axistars.com. where we have like built an ecosystem, a new ecosystem for sportsmen and entertainers, where we want to really make them face only the right people, so right service providers. So I'm fully behind this, and I funded it like my little baby. I'm really like working really, really hard to make sure that everyone benefit from a win-win platform. So yeah, just check it out on social media as well. We are quite active as well to give a understanding of what we're doing.
And when you finish looking at that, go and look at some of Luis Saha's goals. We're going to post some. We're going to post some on our social media in case you guys have forgotten how great a striker he was.
Check out Access Stars as well, guys. If you are looking for, utilising former athletes or entertainers for any particular events, or to be involved in leisure or hospitality, then definitely an app worth downloading. Also provides lots of special offers for exclusive and luxury brands and services. But it's been directly connected to influencers and movers and shakers. So if you want to be doing everything top shelf, then please do download Access Stars, because I've seen it. It's very cool and it works very well. And again, it's encouraging, trying to create an ecosystem which does protect players, both financially as well as personally. So yeah, man, check out Access Stars, please, everybody.
Yeah. And thanks again, Louis. Amazing. I mean, you never played for Arsenal, so obviously, you know, it's not quite the same, you know, but your goals were amazing.
That's all right, Louis. You can make up for it. If you know about a semi-pro team that's near you and they're doing trials right now, I would like a trial with a semi-pro team before I turn 40, just for my bucket list. I don't even need to do much. Just do one training session and get a jumper. And then that's me taken care of, Louis. You know, yes, I'm a comedian, but I still have dreams too. So if you can make that happen, that would be great.
Oh, I can only see your beautiful smile, my man.
Dane's lights have gone off. Dane's lights have gone.
That's set on our conversation, but it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much, and a real insight. And please do stay in touch. And hopefully, I'm sure I'll catch up with you on Access Stars and in the near future.
Take care. Thank you very much. Bye.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste. For more from Dane, go to danebaptiste.co.uk or follow him on Twitter at DaneBapTweets or Instagram at DaneSnapTeast. Our guest was Luis Saha. You can follow Louis on Twitter and Instagram at Luis Saha. The show is produced by me, Howard Cohen. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at the Howard Cohen. The show is mixed and mastered by Audio Culture. You can follow Audio Culture on Instagram at We Are Audio Culture. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at DBQE Podcast. Thanks to Polly, Gelly, and the Acast team for all their support. Thanks for listening, guys, and remember, question everything.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.